I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody. Welcome to Talk to the Audience, where this is always death. I am one of your hosts, Bob Mackey, who is here with me, as always,
30th anniversary lover, Henry Gilbert.
That's right. We have a lot to talk about. But first, welcome to Talk to the Audience. In case you've never heard this podcast, welcome. Thank you for being a patron. This is our monthly community podcast where we talk about news in the Simpsons world and news that's going on with us. And we also answer and respond to your questions and comments left on Patreon about talking Simpsons episodes. And boy, oh boy, this is a big, big month. But first, welcome to our $1 patrons. There's not a whole bunch of you, but we wanted to give something to $1 patrons. And if you are a $1 patron, you get at least this bonus episode every month. We appreciate your dollar. And I think this is a nice little reward for that. So you can at least participate in this and listen to these podcasts.
And when you get a taste of just how easy it is to listen to podcasts from your exclusive Patreon feed, maybe you'll want to hear more.
Our secret plan is to get you into the ecosystem. And then you realize how easy it is to give us money and then give us more money.
It's harder to not give us money, really.
It is. Really, I totally agree.
But boy, what a month this has been at Talking Simpsons. Right before we hit record, we were going through a lot of planning.
I don't think I've ever worked harder. That is not a complaint, because this is all super good stuff, but we are just sort of burning the candle at both ends because we have big, big news. You might have heard about it. Number one, we have three live shows now coming up.
In October, yes.
So listen to this, folks. Check out the Patreon for more information. But Saturday, October 20th at Kelly's Olympian in Portland, we have a 2 o'clock show that my voice cracked because I'm so excited, and a 5 o'clock show at Portland, Talking Simpsons Live. And the 5 o'clock show will have Bill Oakley as our special guest.
Ba-ba-da-da.
Yes. And if you don't have tickets for that, buddy, you better get tickets now, because I think they might be gone. That's why we got a second show, because we sold through the tickets so fast. They're like, you guys got to do a second show. And I said, hey, I'm not going to turn that down. A chance to see my adoring fans.
Yeah, all of our great fans in Portland, Oregon. Bob will be there also for a convention, the Retro Gaming Expo as well. So if you want to see Bob in more places in Portland, Oregon.
I'll be doing a Sunday show, hopefully not hungover, after those two live shows on Saturday. But yes, the show is a paid show. So $10 in advance and $12 at the door. Although I'm really thinking that it's going to be rough getting a ticket at the door for these live shows. But I think they do reserve some space for door tickets. So get there soon. But I recommend 100% go online and get the tickets online.
Yeah, you save $2 ahead and you definitely will have your ticket, and you're not. Don't leave it to the last minute. These the ones for our 5 o'clock show with Bill Oakley went really fast. I bet our 2 o'clock shows where Bill Oakley will not be present, but hey, you still get me and Bob being fun. And
the spirit of Bill Oakley will be there as the spirit of Portland. But yes. So the tickets to the first show, again, go to the Patreon. There is an entire post about all the shows we're doing. I believe the URL for the second show at 5 o'clock with Bill Oakley is tinyurl.com/TalkingSimpsonsLive.
Yep.
And we will have information about the second show on another post, which is coming soon, probably before this podcast goes live. We just set it up. We don't have a URL. The tickets page for that one is not live. But again, we recommend 100% go online, buy the tickets. We did not know what the reception would be. Apparently, you know, selling almost all of your tickets 24 hours means it's a good sign. So yes. Please go online and buy them. I have a huge ego now, by the way. I'm going to be a monster. I'm going to be rude to you when you say hi to me. I've already forgotten about all my old friends.
And again, man, it's Saturday, October 20th in Portland, Oregon at the Kelly's Olympian. So if you're anywhere in the Pacific Northwest, you have no excuse not to go there. None. You better be dead or in jail. And if you're in jail, break out.
It's 2 o'clock and 5 o'clock. And again, it is a paid show. Go online, buy the tickets, go to the Patreon for links to the tickets. I'm sure you could search Google or whatever, but it'll all be on the Patreon in its own post. And it already is, but the second show is not represented there yet as of this recording, but it will be. It doesn't make any sense now, but it'll make sense to you by the time this goes live. Don't worry about it. But you know, that's not all, folks.
No.
We have another live show the following week, Saturday, October 27th, again at our haunt, Piano Fight in San Francisco. It is a 5:30 show. It's free. And by the way, these are both Halloween shows we're doing. Halloween focused. And if you haven't seen Nina Matsumoto's amazing, breathtaking, mind-blowing poster art for this, check it out. It's on the Patreon. We'll be selling those posters at all of the shows. Dear God, I was just excitedly showing that to everyone before I could show it to the world. I was so amazed by that poster. Henry, like, you love that poster too, right? Isn't it great?
I love it so much. I mean, Nina is a master of Simpson style art, and I always love seeing Me and You drawn by her, but in a recreation of the Devil and Homer Simpson is so perfect with our microphones there too. It makes me wish we were doing like a 5-city stop on this thing just to make it worthy of that amazing poster.
Yes, and if you buy the poster, she'll get a little bit of money too. So that's a great way to support Nina and her great stuff. And obviously, we love having her as part of the network and we want her to do more art for us. So please support Nina by buying a poster when we have those available at the shows. And we'll probably put them online at some point. They're really nice posters.
Yeah. And a great way to remember the show. We won't be selling t-shirts there. We'll be selling the posters. But we do have a new t-shirt. And you can find that at shirtsickle.com. You can go to the t-shirt stores section and find Talking Simpsons. Or if you go to tiny.cc/Simpsons Death Shirt, you can see the brand new Simpsons t-shirt. Talking Simpsons t-shirt that is inspired by our classic and one of our most beloved and eerie jingles.
Death stalks you at every turn. Ah, there it is, death.
It is an amazing shirt. I'm ordering mine when I get home. It just went live, so I'm so excited. And again, if you order that shirt, we get a little money, and so does Nina. So it's a great way to help Nina as well as us. So once again, Saturday, October 20th at Kelly's Olympian in Portland at 2 o'clock and 5 o'clock. The 5 o'clock show does have Bill Oakley. Again, these are paid shows in Portland, where we recommend fully that you go online and buy tickets because they go super fast because of the Portland Retro Gaming Expo crowd will be there. And every time I've gone for the past 3 years, people have said, when are you doing a Talking Simpsons show in Portland? Well, guess what, buddy? We'll be there this week, that weekend. You better be there. And I'm sure we'll be back, though. But and Saturday, October 27th, Piano Fight in San Francisco. That is a free show at 5:30 p.m. And we're really looking forward to it. A preview of the future. We're probably doing another show this year at Piano Fight. And we just signed on to do another Sketchfest show at a 200-seat theater in January. So we'll have more info about that once we know about it. We literally did this today. But
yes,
we are so busy with these live shows. I mean, I'm really excited about this. I can't wait for you guys to hear the live shows if you can't make it there. This is now like a big part of Talking Simpsons that I never envisioned being part of our podcast. But I'm a little nervous, but I think it'll be great. And I can't wait to do these live shows.
It's super duper exciting. And another thing that we didn't think would be part of our lives now, but we're going on another LA podcast recording trip.
I almost forgot about
that. 2 days from now, we're going to be flying out to LA again to record some cool podcasts with guests I think you'll like, listeners.
Yes. Oh boy. When you find out, oh dear. Oh wow. You're going to lose your minds.
You'll find out sooner than later on some of them, but we're really excited. Just going down to LA and recording with our cool LA buddies again is just super exciting to me, but it's also, boy, is a lot happening at once. Man, oh man.
If I had a girlfriend, she'd kill me. I'm leaving that in. So let's get into, actually, we have a few other announcements. So we did a lot of fun interviews this month. So Mark Kirkland actually launched on August 31st.
Right.
Which was technically September. So we have that. We had the Josh Weinstein interview about Disenchantment. We're going to get him back for Simpsons interviews.
For
possibly,
sure.
Maybe with Bill Oakley. That'd be great to get them both in one session. We don't know yet, but we're going to try to make it work. And also, coming up, we also had Allie and Julia from Everything's Coming Up Simpsons. Check out their new book. A lot of interviews in September, and we have one that is coming up soon, and we won't tell them what it is, right?
No, yeah. Let it be a surprise, but we have recorded another one, and I think you guys will really enjoy it, especially if you're a comic book nerd like me. I'll just put it that way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so more cool interviews are coming. We're working real hard to make this worth your while on the Patreon, folks.
Yeah, so thanks again so much for donating. Now to get into the comments. Number one, we just got off of a 3-hour long recording for an upcoming episode, and I've just had caffeine in my body and no food for a while, so hopefully I'll be able to get through all these comments without screwing it up. The first episode is Lisa's Date with Density, and Andrew Giacchetti says, just because it's now my sort of job to point those things out, Nelson's little toady guys aren't actually dead, though that might have been a better joke. They reappear during a meeting of the bullies in the B story of the season 25 episode Winter of His Content, which is, among many things, a parody of The Warriors. Hmm. Nelson finds his old buddies at this meeting, and it is revealed that they transferred to Shelbyville Elementary School. And I think maybe we last saw them in Bart the General?
Yeah, I think so. I think they didn't have anything to say after their first appearance.
They realized Nelson could just hang out with Dolph, Jimbo, and Kearney, and it's fine.
And they look so weird. They're literal toadies in that they look like toads.
Aren't they like twin looking things?
Yeah.
Too? Yeah.
Well, they have the very classy Chupo era design of Simpsons. It's like, just draw two guys twice. The same guy twice.
They're like tiny Moes, aren't they?
They are. They should be Moe's secret children. But Moe would never have sex.
I mean, yeah, that's true.
So Kat Haberg says, I lived in Portland for 3 years and also host a donut review podcast, so I feel I'm qualified to weigh in on the Voodoo versus Blue Star question. Basically, Bob is right. Blue Star is better overall, but I also feel like Voodoo is sometimes unfairly maligned by locals. They are good donuts, and they also travel / hold up really well. My boyfriend and I brought back a dozen from the LA location recently, and we're enjoying them for days after. They're also bigger than Blue Star Donuts, essentially the only donuts I've had other than those from Dough in NYC that I would consider appropriately sized. But then I like my donuts to be a meal.
And I have a note there in the comments, Blue Star was the unanimous winner.
Oh, I see.
Amongst people that have lived in Portland and been in Portland. So I win, number one. I was actually in Portland recently with Talking Simpsons friend Maddie Kopp, and we were going to go to Voodoo Donuts and Blue Star just to compare the two, but some idiot was getting married at Voodoo Donuts.
Ooh.
Why waste everybody's time? Which meant the line was even longer than normal. So we went to Blue Star. It was a 10-minute line. We both loved the donuts. So again, testimony. Take it from me, folks. Blue Star, better donuts. Voodoo, sit and spin, baby.
I'll try to have one of those when I'm there in Portland soon.
Yeah, please, like, do both. I mean, you'll be in town for long enough.
I'll be in town for about 22 hours, so I don't know.
In between live shows, there'll be no time.
Well, yeah, I mean, six, if depending on how long I sleep, I think I have maybe 8 hours free in there.
Maybe I'll try to get some ahead of time, but I think Voodoo Donuts turn into sand after, like, 6 hours.
You know, a good gift, actually, I guess, if you're coming down to the live shows, to hand me some Voodoo Donuts, perhaps.
Ooh, and hand me Blue Star. Hurricane Nettie is the next episode. And David McBurney says, bit of a Bible ramble, Job is part of the Jewish Tanakh, which basically divides itself into the books of Moses, the books purportedly chronicling the lives and doings of prophets, and the writings, which are largely a mix of practicality and philosophical questions. Job's placement in the writings clarifies that it is, even by biblical standards, not to be interpreted as a literal account of specific events, but as an attempt to grapple with why bad things happen to the good and faithful, ultimately coming to the conclusion that it is not always punishment and condemning those who would assume as such. Sorry, I find the history and philosophy fascinating, so just wanted to throw that in, even if as I write this, I feel I should be apologizing for the abominable things done in that collection of writings, named especially now to LGBTQ+ groups. And I have to say, the Bible should have like a little like editor's note, not actually happening.
Yeah,
satire or
metaphor.
Like, there you go. Like, I mean, a little clarification, please.
Yeah, well, especially it's interesting. I appreciate that comment too, because I definitely took issue with it. But when it comes from the Jewish tradition like that, that's fine. But then when it gets shoved into the Old Testament of the Bible, it's just read on the same level of realness as any other bit of it is.
That's why I prefer the New Testament. It's the TNG of the Bible.
Yeah. Better characters, more believability.
And boy, what an ending.
So Austin Allison said about Hurricane Nettie, Steve Young also co-wrote the book Everything's Coming Up Prophets, the golden age of industrial musicals, with Sport Murphy. It catalogs the history of industrial musicals, which were Broadway-styled shows and songs produced by a number of big companies from the 1950s to the 80s, and were meant to be exclusively screened at various private company events and meetings. These films and records glorified everything from battery clocks to kitchen appliances, but were never meant to be seen by the public. Young has collected hosted them and taken them on tour in recent years, giving talks about their production and screening them for audiences. A buddy and I saw them at the Loft Cinema in Tucson, Arizona back in 2016, and it was unforgettably bizarre.
And I have a link to a song called My Bathroom, which is great. We need to hear this now on the show.
My bathroom.
Whoa.
My bathroom.
Oh, boy.
Is a private kind of place.
Wow.
Very special kind of place. The only place where I can stay. Making faces at my face.
Okay.
That's enough of that. I listened to the entire song. They avoid most of the what you think of a bathroom is for.
Yeah, but
this reminds me a lot of the MST3K short they riffed on called "Design for Dreaming."
Absolutely,
and it's like a couple like singing and dancing about a kitchen. Mm-hmm. It was just like promoting the idea of like kitchen appliances, but. Boy, yeah, there was like a cottage industry of just making industrial musicals or like...
That also reminds me, MST3K, of the Once Upon a Honeymoon.
Oh, yeah.
And a phone in the kitchen will do.
Oh, God, yeah.
Phones.
That riff taught me the phrase, I don't give a tin shit.
My favorite line from that is like, there's a gay man on a roof, honey.
That's right. Oh, God, so much fun. So J.R. Rawls says, Homeboys in Outer Space is a punchline of a show, but I did some digging and prepared to have your minds blown. So, Bob's aside here, listen to the Chapo Trap House interview with Mike Reiss. They start by talking about Homeboys in Outer Space because apparently Mike Reiss wrote about it. And the people that invented Homeboys, the people that created Homeboys are now like huge, right?
Yeah. They've gone on to much more fame and fortune than that.
So in terms of Nielsen ratings, Homeboys in Outer Space seem to fluctuate between a 2.9 and a 2.2. Let's call it an average of a 2.5. Sounds pretty tiny, don't it? In 1997, it sure was, but the television world has fragmented an incredible amount in the last 20 years. How much? Well, if Homeboys in Outer Space had received that exact same Nielsen score average for the 2015 to 2016 season, here are some shows that it would have higher ratings than. The Simpsons, as well as Gotham, Two Broke Girls, Family Guy, The Flash, Dancing with the Stars, Better Call Saul, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., South Park, Arrow. That's right. In today's terms, Homeboys in Outer Space would be more popular than every single comic book show, with the sole exception of Supergirl, with whom it would be tied. Boy.
That, you know, that's not super surprising just because everything has low rate. Like, Boston Common would be the highest rated show on television right now.
Oh, boy. Comparison. And, like, when you go back and you read about, like, oh, this show was canceled because it sucked and the ratings were bad. Like, reading about Futurama getting low ratings. Only 9 million viewers? What are you thinking, Fox? This show's awful.
We don't get out of bed for something that low.
But I remember, like, Rick and Morty was a huge hit for Adult Swim because it got 1 million viewers. Yep. That is insane. Like, I believe the Season 8 Simpsons episodes that we're doing now were, like, getting 20 million viewers in 1997.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. No, their lowest-rated one was, like, 12 million for 22 short films about Springfield. But otherwise, like, they were getting an 18 to 20 range in Season 8 still.
Yep, that just shows people have better things to do than watch UPN on a Friday night or whenever.
So now we move on to the episode El Viaje Misterioso de Nuestro Homer. And Andrew Giacchetti chimes in again. I'm glad this is a very pro-Johnny Cash episode. Johnny Cash is hands down one of my favorite artists of all time and one of the biggest inspirations for me as a musician. A huge part of that is his voice. It's so iconic and just so great. What kills me, though, is his voice is great for voiceover, as this episode shows, but if you look through his IMDb page, this was like the only voiceover work he ever did except being narrator from time to time. I'm sure he had too much going on to make any sort of side career out of it, but I am shocked and disappointed more cartoons didn't get Johnny Cash cameos, and I'm really curious how The Simpsons managed to do it. Also, Bob is totally right. Everyone, or at least 90% of people, should trip at least once in their life. I think the world would probably be a slightly better place. It's a shame hallucinations are so vilified in the last century, because psychologists today are demonstrating that they have tremendous clinical value, and this was also recognized by psychologists back then.
You know what? Sorry, I got the comments for this episode, and I forgot that two of them were like, Bob was right!
It's cool. That's the favoritism on those. I know I did that a few times of like, and Henry's right. He's right.
So take two tabs of acid and then go to Blue Star Donuts.
Oh, boy.
But don't freak out.
I don't know if I want to do that on my first Portland trip.
No, don't do that. That's a bad idea.
Someday I should hallucinate just because take some hallucinogen just to imagine something, to free my imagination again. But I think I have a more active imagination than most of you like 9-to-5 slobs out there.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm kidding.
You're turning off our slob audience, Henry, please. But yeah, Johnny Cash, apparently he didn't do a lot of voiceover.
It's shocking.
Maybe people just were like, Johnny Cash wouldn't do this. He's so serious.
Cartoons are stupid. They're for babies. We wouldn't ask him to do this. Actually, you'll hear some more. We definitely had some comments that were like, why didn't you have Nina chime in on this Space Coyote stuff? She is Space Coyote. And while I loved our guest, Zachary Ryan, I am glad that in an upcoming episode, teasing folks, but in an upcoming Talking Simpsons, you will hear from Nina Matsumoto, and she will, me and Bob and her will talk a lot about Johnny Cash. So you get ready for that.
We got some cool stories and sad ones too about Johnny Cash.
Yes, yeah.
But we have John Brandon who says, I'm forever grateful for this episode for introducing me to the Doodletown Pipers. Their cover of A Hard Day's Night might be one of the best things I've heard all year. If you happen to appreciate this sort of thing, you should look up the New Christy Minstrels, as they are another big influence for the new Main Street Singers from A Mighty Wind. And Henry, I have a link to the Cursed yes. song. Did we play this on that episode?
Let me see here.
I don't remember, but I kind of vaguely remember. But it's something you'll never forget.
Yes, I did play a little of this.
Wait, leave it on.
It's been a hard day's night. And I've been working like a dog.
Turn it off. Thank you.
We'll also talk about the new Christy Minstrels on an upcoming Talking Simpsons we've recorded as well.
We've recorded like 8 in advance, people. We've been really...
We have 6 in advance, and by this time next Tuesday, I think we'll actually be about 11 in advance.
We'll be done with 2018.
Yeah, no more. They just coast. And by coast, I mean do more live shows.
And record our miniseries for next year.
Yes. Oh my God, we're going to do that at the same time as Sketchfest. Joe Quigley says, hey guys, going to put on my Genius at Work shirt because I do have a correction. Short Shorts was not actually written by an old man, but by Bob Gaudio of the Four Seasons when he was only about 16 years old, which, whoa.
That's the perfect age to get into Short Shorts, I gotta say. Hormones are brewing.
Wow. So that guy was just 16 writing songs already being taken advantage of by the music publishing industry.
I'm sure he made it out alive. Or not. I didn't do any research on that.
I haven't looked into this guy. Let's not speak too soon.
Don't play the death jingle. So, up next we have the Springfield Files, and Allison says, I really like how Bob... Oh my God. Bob Mackey definitely got all these comments.
What the hell?
I was not doing this on purpose, by the way.
No.
Allison says, I really like how Bob made the very controversial statement that we don't need two kinds of brown M&Ms. And Henry started stuttering like how he wanted to argue with Bob, but decided to move on. Nerd observation alert. I know Henry and Bob both have very strong opinions about candy, and one day we'll get a candy off. One day. So I think I put this here because, Henry, did you have some sort of protest against the idea of two brown M&Ms being okay?
No. I mean, they are the same. It's too redundant of a color. I miss... Well, okay. My thoughts on the brown M&M is that I think the tan M&M should have been the one to survive, not the dark brown, which is what we ended up with, I believe.
Actually, a friend of the show, Nick Daniel, said tan is his favorite M&M.
Okay.
And he's a weirdo.
No, I mean, red was my old favorite color. I think orange or blue is my favorite color now. But I do agree with you, it's redundant that we have two brown, that we had two brown in the 80s. I would have kept tan over regular brown, though.
As for a candy off, I don't know. I've really lost my sweet tooth since my early 20s, I have to say. But when I have candy, it's got to be like bitter and salty. So like dark chocolate covered pretzels or something like that is really good.
Those are pretty good.
I'm so hungry.
we got to finish this podcast. No more comments. No, Daniel Freitag says, honestly, given that no one who worked on the show, at least from the writing and showrunning capacity, was an X-Files fan, because this works pretty well with the formula of their episodes, even with mere minimal appearances. As Hank pointed out, Episodes usually began with a cold open away from Mulder and Scully, though sometimes they appear. And then we see them in the FBI headquarters picking up the case. Then they head out to the detective work, and often the third act is Mulder's crazy theory being proven wrong by some bizarre scientific explanation, i.e. vampires are just people with a disease where sunlight harms them. And then they leave while pondering what it means. Other times Mulder is proven right, but the evidence disappears and they have other concluding thoughts.
Interesting. I guess it does follow the similar pattern of Next Files, although they don't wait an entire act to introduce Mulder and Scully.
Yeah, and Mulder and Scully would have been more key. It would have been Mulder and Scully revealing that it was Mr. Burns, not Lisa. They would have figured it out.
That's true. I guess the practical reveal was a very X-Files thing. And one thing I want to point out is that on that episode, I thought the thing about the knife alien was a webcomic. It's actually a tweet that I rediscovered. And actually, Nina Matsumoto, she made a Frinkiac version of that scene with Mulder and Scully.
Works perfectly.
Ever heard of the knife alien?
And that, if you're looking for good X-Files episodes to start with or to just watch to understand the show, the vampire one he's mentioning there is so good. It guest stars Luke Wilson, and it's kind of a Rashomon thing where Mulder remembers him meeting vampires one way, Scully remembers it a different way, and they are explaining their sides of the story. It's a lot of fun.
Interesting. So Irate says, dry beer was a marketing fad in the 90s taken from Japanese beers, which still persist in Japan. Asahi Dry is an example. Mm. It just means there's less residual sugar left in the beer. Dry as opposed to sweet or malty. Less sugar also means more alcohol. Ooh, I like this. Budweiser's case, I think the idea was to have a 5% ABV beer that tasted closer to Bud Light. So I don't like that, but I have to try more dry beer then. I don't like sweeter beers. I like more bitter beers that have a higher alcohol content. So
next time we're at a Japanese restaurant, we'll look for Asahi Dry. Maybe they sell it there and we can give it a shot. Andrew Bouvier says, if I remember right, when the blue M&M was finally introduced, he was the cool M&M. Red and yellow had a sort of George and Lenny situation going on, with red being smarter and snarky and yellow being a bit dumb and naive. Then blue came out and he was the cool M&M. I believe the ads had him playing the saxophone while looking like the Blues Brothers or something.
So cool.
The height of coolness to look like Dan Aykroyd. Then they started putting the green M&Ms in the ads, and I guess everyone just wanted to fuck her, people included. Everybody was thirsty for the candy lady. I think the brown one was used in ads next, and it was another lady, but I think the implication was that she was a black lady M&M, if that makes any sense.
Well, the green M&M was Halle Berry for fashion.
Yeah. Well, also there was the orange M&M. Oh, we're getting to that.
Yeah.
Then came orange, or maybe origin was before brown, who was crispy, later pretzel. Then I think they brought back crispy. The orange M&M was rightfully very apprehensive about being an M&M where people wanted to constantly eat him. And as many people know, the original voice of yellow was J.K. Simmons. And Billy West, I still believe, does the voice of red. And lately, I heard David Cross as the voice of the piece of caramel that is now put into the M&Ms.
Yeah, as I said before, John Lovitz was originally red, but yes. I guess he got too pricey for them.
Billy West, much more available, and scale. It will work scale. He still does. I just saw a pre-movie advertisement with the M&Ms going, turn off your cell phone, M&Ms, and it's still Billy West. Orange, actually, I am the biggest fan of crispy M&Ms. That is my number one M&M flavor, and it was so sad that they went away. We had them in the late 90s. They went away in America in the mid-2000s. They were still available in England and Japan, and now they have come back in America. But that was, out of all the kooky Japanese candy I was enjoying on my first trip to Tokyo, number one for me was like, they have crispy M&Ms. I haven't had these in a decade.
I love all of the different Kit Kats they have in Japan.
Oh, yes.
When I worked at a Japanese office, they were always there. People were always coming back from Japan with new Kit Kats.
Oh, jealous, man.
And I got to say, so I believe the orange M&M is now caramel. And the cover of the M&M, the bag for the M&M caramel variety is red and yellow pulling apart an orange M&M to show you the caramel inside. Someone on Twitter did a recreation of that, but as if they're pulling apart a living Eminem. And it's like his entrails are just being pulled out of his body as they're ripping him in half.
That's horrifying.
It's amazing because that's the image that's what's actually happening on the candy wrapper.
Well, they trade on that a little bit in those ads, like those crispy Eminem ads where he's like, "Don't eat me, please," or Patrick Warburton watching them eat their own M&Ms,
yeah.
And he's like, that's weird.
I don't like when they call attention to that fact. So speaking of the devil, Nina Matsumoto says, The X-Files was filmed here, and it was the pride of Vancouver. Pretty much every local acting veteran has been on the show. My pal and Simpsons comics writer, Ian Boothby, is friends with one of the lone gunmen. Wow.
Whoa.
The whole city hated Duchovny for years when he took the show to LA, and you'll hear more about that on our episode with Nina coming up.
Meanwhile, our Twisted World of Marge Simpson's comments, Lady of Old Boots says, New Attitude was also the intro-outro music for Dr. Laura Schlesinger back when my mom listened to her. If you don't know about Dr. Laura, she's basically the demon bride of Rush Limbaugh and most famous for arguing that white people should be able to use the N-word while saying the actual word a dozen times. Just hearing the clip of the song in this podcast transported me back to the backseat of my mom's wood-paneled station wagon.
We're very sorry.
I've heard that clip. I remember when that clip was new and people were like, oh my God, Dr. Laura did this. And it's not so a black woman calls in. I believe the situation was a black woman calls in to say that her not African-American husband, she feels he shouldn't be able to say the N-word. And Dr. Laura says, I have black friends and I say it all the time.
Ooh.
And she talks about her black friend in the story, who is apparently the person who is fine with her saying the N-word, is like her bodyguard or an employee. She's like, I play basketball with this employee and we call each other that all the time and he's fine with it. I was like, he works for you. What's he going to do? Tell you like, shut your fat mouth, shut your bitch mouth. He's not going to say that.
If you want to know more about her, I think we talk a lot about her on the Talking Futurama episode for Fishful of Dollars because Mom is sort of based on Dr. Laura.
That's right.
That's horrifying though. We're really sorry. New Attitude is right. So Maverick 45 says, yeah, Homer's right. It's the same sort of improv that we saw when Barney was worried about running out of beer at poker night. Dan used the same sort of joke twice. Well, you know what? I think it's a fucking hilarious joke.
I love it every time.
So go back to that improv. I swear it's good.
He should be allowed that once a season, I think. Gerard Hornbeck says, thoughts on the show as I listen. First and foremost, Henry has never had falafel. It's one of the most delicious things around. The word ethnic, the whole ethnic food scene was always very funny to me, but I never found it relatable. I always thought the whitewashing of Mediterranean food was being presented for some extreme exaggeration to make Springfield seem so shitty and out of touch. I never thought that this is how most of the country approached iffy food. Mm-hmm. I grew up and have lived in New York City for my entire life, and there are so many neighborhoods that offer authentic cuisines from regions that are thousands of miles apart, only right next door to each other. I sort of forget that people are so sheltered from any non-white European food. My favorite neighborhood restaurant is Tibetan. The fact that there are people who haven't been exposed to it is stifling.
Well, la-di-da, Mr. Frenchman.
Yeah.
We ain't got no falafel.
Oh, Mr. New York City. No, I mean, well, now I've lived in Berkeley for 11 years, and I definitely could eat falafel every day if I wanted to. I need to
head out
to
this. We gotta get some falafel.
Yeah, well, not this meal after this recording, but we should definitely do
that. There's a new falafel place. I gotta tell you, though, but I mean, we grew up in the suburbs. Suburbs are a place for certain kinds of people to go to escape other kinds of people and their food. So lots of things were kept from me until I was old enough to like go outside of that area and be like, oh, I like Indian food. I like Tibetan food. I like Thai food. Like, it was a great experience. But man, what I would have given to just experience that much earlier in my life.
Yeah, that shelteredness is not a flaw of the suburbs. It is by design.
Yes.
It is made. Our parents went there, if not with the expressed intention of racist feelings, but of just wanting to feel comfortable, and comfort to them meant being around things that are familiar, which means white people.
Or their parents moved there post-World War II, and that's just what they're used to. But yeah I mean, it's always fun when my parents come out here, and I make them try things they think are weird and scary, and I laugh at them, and it's like, Mom, ramen is just soup. You've had soup before.
Yeah.
It's just soup.
I had that same
ramen
conversation
about this
with my mom, too.
So our final comment, Evan Gray says, Considering the Harvard background of many of the writers, it wouldn't surprise me if they've taken a few finance classes back in their college days. In finance classes, they tell you that the average nominal return on stocks is around 7.6% per year. So when Helen Lovejoy says that our shares in Dynaflux Unimatics are up delicious 7.75%, they're basically right on average, maybe a hair better. I thought this was a clever joke because it implies that the Investorats aren't particularly great investors. Their investment in Dynaflux Unimatics was the most average investment they could make, and they would have been no better just putting money in a major stock index. Maybe this joke was unintentional, but knowing the writer's attention to detail on everything, I have a feeling they intentionally put this in there to underscore the meaninglessness of the Investorats business model. Maybe I'm wrong, but this made me chuckle and was a joke I never would have caught if it weren't for sitting through boring finance classes myself. Just another layer to the onion of The Simpsons. Great episode as always. Thank you. And actually, we just did an episode in which a writer read an entire book about wine to write one joke about wine. This is the era of The Simpsons that we're in where you need to be as like close as possible when you're making a reference.
Yeah, I think that is entirely... If they didn't take those finance classes, at the very least, I would think they are in know of the stock market and what a good return is. And to have it so specifically be just slightly better than the accepted average of 7.6%, that feels very intentional to me.
And there are like at least two PhDs on the staff right now of this era.
Yeah.
So somebody knows what their math, I think. But yeah, it's been great this month, guys. Thank you so much for giving to us. We are looking forward to all of the live shows we're going to be doing soon again. That's October 20th in Portland, Oregon at Kelly's Olympian, 2 o'clock and 5 o'clock. Please buy tickets online if you can. We think they're going to sell out super quick, and we want everyone to see the show if they want to go.
5 p.m. is with Bill Oakley. Those tickets have been going super fast. 2 p.m. is just me and Bob, but you'll have a great time too, and those tickets are going fast as well.
And it's Halloween theme. We'll have video clips. It'll just be like the show that you're listening to, except we'll be there, and you can drink as much as you want, and you can laugh at us and hopefully not heckle us, or come to boo us. Please don't do that.
Laugh with us.
Yes. And also, on the 27th of October at Piano Fight, that is a free show at 5:30. Check it out. You don't need to buy tickets online or anything like that. It's always a great time at Piano Fight. It's a great venue, and we love being there. And again, it'll be our Halloween show. We think you'll have a lot of fun. Anything else I'm missing, Henry?
Well, and don't forget to pick up your brand new Halloween-themed Simpsons t-shirt. You can find it at shirtsicle.com or tiny.cc/SimpsonsDeathShirt. Pick it up for yourself starting in $19.99 plus shipping and handling and tax and blah, blah, blah.
Again, thank you so much for listening and donating. We're doing so much exciting stuff. There's so much happening in the next 2 months. We can't wait to show it to you and also do live shows for you and sell you new t-shirts and new posters. Things are moving super fast for us. We're super happy, though. But thanks again for donating. We'll see you next month for another episode of Talk to the Audience. Goodbye.
Bye.
Infotainment.